This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, in the news, we've got missing money in one North Texas school district. We'll also see how legislators are responding to these anti-gun walkouts at public schools across the state. In our interview, I sit down with Empower Texans Board Chairman Tim Dunn while we were in Israel to talk about the biblical roots of self-governance. And we'll close with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan about a congressman who's asleep at the wheel. It's good to be back in the Lone Star State and back in the 1836 studios for another week of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. I want to thank Kerry Cheshire for holding down the fort for the last couple of weeks as a group of us from the Empower Texans team toured the land of Israel, exploring the biblical roots of self-government. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the program, but first we'll get started with this week's news. We go up to Ross Kessig in North Texas, who has some news about some missing money in one North Texas school district. Tell us about it, Ross.
Yeah, so taxpayers in East Texas in Greenville ISD demanded, after noticing some problems with the district running deficits and having other financial issues, the taxpayers demanded that a forensic audit be done to dig down in and find out why the district was having so many problems. And what was uncovered was astonishing, you know, from cronyism to theft and a lot of other issues.
Yeah, basically millions of dollars in missing money, missing bond money that was supposed to go for education projects.
Yeah, we don't have the details of the report because the forensic auditor turned over the report to the Attorney General's office to do a criminal investigation. But what we do know is that of about $79 million in bond expenditures, approximately $54 million of those expenditures have no paper trail. That was told to the press in a recent news report. And so we'll be anxious to get the details of the report, but it's very troubling.
And so we had the situation here. The local district officials were fighting against this forensic audit taking place, and kind of some concern about that.
Yeah, what the news report missed was that the superintendent was actually fighting against having the forensic audit done in the first place. Late last year, taxpayers, again, were demanding that a forensic audit be done, and they brought the district brought in another auditor to just do kind of a cursory audit, and they had found issues. There were some payroll issues, some other problems, but the superintendent assured the public that nothing that was revealed in that audit, you know, suggested that any criminal wrongdoing was going on. And taxpayers said, no, that's not good enough. They had a lot of good reasons to believe there was potentially criminal behavior going on. So they insisted, the taxpayers insisted that the school board push forward and hire a forensic auditor. And they were right. The superintendent was wrong. The forensic auditor was quoted as saying that former GISD officials engaged in cronyism and misappropriation of payroll assets and abusive position and theft by gift of taxpayer monies. So the superintendent was wrong. The taxpayers were right.
Wow. How would this happen? You know, how would a district be able to steal bond money like this?
Yeah, that's kind of unclear, but what I can say is this. Every taxing entity in Texas, whether it's a city or a community college or a school district, has to have their financials audited. So they hire these accounting firms to do these cursory audits, and basically what they do is they say how much money came in, how much money went out. They don't actually go in and do a forensic audit and find out where the money actually went, whether it was appropriate or not. And so taxing entities in Texas are not required to do even periodic forensic audits. And so after these bond propositions get approved by voters, a blank check is basically given to the school district to spend however they want. And their financials, what they're required to report, don't really make it clear as to where that money goes. They just say, we spent, you know, $20 million. And to get all the details about where the money went, you have to open records requests, the contracts, and invoices and a whole bunch of details that really never get disclosed to the public. So I don't think our requirements our legal requirements that the legislature puts on taxing entities are good enough for these entities to be transparent. So obviously things fly under the radar.
Yeah. So real quick, what's the next steps on this? Is this in the hands of the Attorney General?
Yeah. So the Attorney General's office has been given the auditor's report. And so they are obviously are not going to be discussing that. But it's possible that some sources there in the community have more information about what can be discussed publicly. And we'll certainly be doing some follow-up reports on that to talk a little bit more about what was found.
Yeah, and I hope that if there is criminal behavior there, that those people are held accountable for that. Thanks for your reporting on this, Ross. I think this isn't our last story about these events.
It's certainly not the last. Thank you.
Next, let's turn to Brandon Walton's Capital Bureau Chief with Texas Scorecard. Last week, we saw a bunch of school districts sanctioning walkouts by students, political protests against gun rights happening all across Texas. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, and so these protests have been happening not only in Texas, but all across the country in this latest gun control campaign that has captured the imagination of liberals everywhere.
Yeah, and so some of those liberals being school administrators, we're seeing them actually not just tolerate these student walkouts, but actually kind of help organize these
student
walkouts.
Exactly. So you think of something like a walkout as being an act of defiance, of protest, but what we're actually seeing is that in some districts, the administration, the principals are actually encouraging it. They're handing out flyers. They're even offering excused absences in some districts, apparently. So you're seeing a lot of schools across the state actually encouraging these anti-gun walkouts.
It's really crazy. I mean, you know, a walkout is a defiant act. It says, I'm fed up with you people. I'm walking out in the streets. You can't keep me here. I've got something. You know, and you see these things. It's student, typical student thing. But you can't walk out on yourself, right? You know, the administration. Like, oh, we're so fed up with ourselves. We're going to walk. It's silly. But so you saw these students go out and do these protests, but it's in these, like, it's the designated walkout area.
Exactly. A designated time. We're going to do this. We're going to have these flyers. They're approved weeks in advance.
Yeah. You know? And what we're seeing too is students who are, you know, in favor of the Second Amendment, who are in favor of gun rights, stifled, not allowed to participate, not allowed to protest and do counter protests of these things.
Not allowed to counter and certainly, you know, feeling stigmatized in a lot of these districts because they don't want to participate in the anti-gun walkout.
In the official school anti-gun walkout. So this is a problem, that taxpayer dollars going to political activity. Mm-hmm. Some Republican legislators not very happy with the funds they appropriated in the budget being used this way.
Yes, so State Representative Briscoe Kane, legislator out of the Harris County, Houston area, actually is drafting a bill to recoup, claw back some of the money from districts that offer excused absences, the idea being that if taxpayer money is going to these schools to educate kids and they're letting them walk out and use that time to protest the Constitution, you know, taxpayers deserve to have that money back.
Yeah, taxpayers aren't paying the schools to organize political rallies against the people's rights. They are paying the schools to educate children. And so if they're sending the kids out into the streets to protest gun rights, we're going to try and take some of that money back.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, appreciate your reporting on it, Brandon. Thanks for joining me and talking about it.
Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Up next, I sat down with Empower Texans Board Chairman Tim Dunn in Jerusalem to talk about the topic of our trip to Israel, the biblical roots of self-governance. You know, when you study scripture, you realize that there's nothing new under the sun. The issues we face today as a nation are the same issues the ancient Israelites faced 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. We'll be bringing you this interview in three parts over the next 3 weeks. I hope you enjoy. You know, the other day I saw a liberal group attacking self-governance as some sort of radical extremist idea. But it's the foundation of our system of government and has roots going back to biblical times. And that's what we're here exploring.
Self-governance, I don't know if it's radical. I would say it's exceptional. For most of human history, the norm has been a tribal chief or a tyrant of one sort or another, military conquest, and you have the haves and the have-nots by force, not the way we have it in our society. The people who have a lot of money, that make a lot of money, that have a lot of prosperity, typically are the people that have figured out a way to serve people better.
Yeah, right. In a free market society, that's the beauty of it is, you know, how do you get ahead? It's by serving others
the best.
And bringing them in as in a service.
Voluntarily.
Right.
Not, I conquered you and now you have to serve me. So, but it's exceptional because there's not many economies like that. And there's not many societies like that. So the question is, well, why not? You clearly have a superior outcome, but human nature hasn't changed. And the reality is that selfishness and greed and the ability to exert power on other people are a deadly combination. And that has killed the freedom and ability to prosper in most societies. Now, you know, the Greeks oscillated back and forth between some semblances of self-governance with democracy and then tyranny, sometimes just within a decade or so.
And sometimes tyranny and democracy.
Yeah, so, and it was not for everybody. You know, it was mostly for the nobles. But the interesting thing about the Bible is that when God brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, out of slavery, and he had this example population that is supposed to go and live the kind of life that is the most constructive. And he put them in a land bridge between Asia and Africa where most of the people in the world lived.
And what we've seen, this is the crossroads of the world.
And the trade routes come through. This is the intersection of Main Street and whatever the other Main Street. He wanted to put the people there and say, be an example to the world of what constructive living looks like so it will spread. That was the idea as God gave them the charge. And then he brought them out of that land of Egypt, and the first thing he did was give them the first of three pillars of self-governance. So self-governance has three pillars. And God gave them the first one at Mount Sinai, the law.
So the rule of law.
Rule of law. First pillar of self-governance is the rule of law. Now, rule of law is most well known in the Ten Commandments, which the pro-tyranny people hate the Ten Commandments. They always want to wipe it out, right? And so the Ten Commandments really has two parts. The first four commandments is one part, last six are another part. And Jesus actually summarized the Ten Commandments this way, and he said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. That's the first four. And then you love your neighbors yourself. That's the last six. Now, another way to say that is the first four says God gets to make the rules. So rule of law is right and wrong is not something man makes up.
Right.
It just is. Right. It's always wrong to be selfish and greedy and abuse your power.
Yeah. And we see that. I mean, and that's in contrast to just the will of the tyrant, the will of whoever's in charge, the strong man.
So in the tyrant and in the tribal culture, the strong man makes the rules. Okay, it's not rule of law; it's rule of man. Okay, so in rule of law, the law is above the man. Whoever the highest man is, he's not above the law.
Right.
Okay? So that's the first pillar of self-governance. So now, embedded in the second part, the first part is God gets to make the rules. But embedded in the second part is the second pillar of self-governance, which is private property. And private property, in the biblical concept, is a broader concept than just I can have title to land. It is that each individual person has a sphere of sovereignty that must be respected by others.
Right. Over themselves, over their property, the things they hold.
Yeah, you can't go hit people because you want them to do something. You can't coerce them physically to get them to do something. You can't take their stuff from them. Okay? You respect their person. That each person is a little sovereign sphere and should be respected. Right. All men are created equal. Okay? That's the declarations, Declaration of Independence,
right?
Expression of the second pillar of self-governance. So,
and we can see that in the Ten Commandments itself: "Thou shalt not steal."
Don't steal. Don't take your neighbor's wife.
Right.
Don't envy. Yeah. Don't lie. So lying is a form of coercion.
Sure. Defrauding.
Defrauding people. Okay. So. First part is God gets to make the rules, not man. And now, men get to make rules within the rules, right? But the big rules, God gets to make.
Yeah, the right? Fundamentals.
And the fundamentals. Don't kill people, right? Don't murder people to get stuff from, to coerce them. Okay, and the second thing is private property. Protect, respect the personal sphere. And then the third pillar is the most amazing one, I think. So God brings the people out. And he takes them to the edge of the promised land, which we're in now. And he says, okay, go take this land. And he tells us why they're taking the land, because the societies there have gone so polluted that he's just ready to start over.
Right.
And that's a whole different discussion as, you know, because does God, you know, was God a mean person to do that? And I just point at, you know, Osama bin Laden was killed. We had a national holiday. Okay. And how do we know comprehensively that was a bad guy? We're all pretty confident.
Right.
But do you really know
right.
what he had done in between the time? Do we really know? We didn't care. We wanted him dead anyway.
Right.
And here's God saying, I'm ready to wipe out. And we say, oh, well, we don't know about that. You know, we're second guessing.
We're second guessing.
Yeah. So, you know, God gets to make the rules, okay? So we'll stay at that. But then he says, choose from among yourself judges. Okay, so who knows best? You take God for granted that God is God, right? Who knows best? So why didn't he pick the judges? Because he wants us to do that job. It's like, okay, I've set this up for you. Now you go figure it out. Because we're here on the earth to grow and to learn to serve each other and to serve God by faith. In the rest of our existence, there'll be no faith.
Right. Well, but one of the things we've talked about as we've been here looking at these sites is that this is a hard task. It's not an easy thing to govern yourself. And you see this in the stages of the civilization in Israel of a phase where they have judges, they govern themselves, and they do they have God as king. Yeah. And then they change and they say, well, we want to be like everyone else. We want a king.
Yeah. So yes. So after they come into the land, there's a period of self-governance. And the Bible says every man did what was right in his own eyes. Now, you can take that two ways. One is that there was no enforcement of the law. It was voluntary. Because God gave the law, and he even had a taxation system. It was a tithe.
Sure.
Two different tithes each year, and then another tithe every third year. So it's about 22%, something like that, you know. But it's all voluntary. The book of Malachi says, hey, you guys are not, you're not stepping up paying the money, so I'm not sending the rain. You know, if you'll do your job, I'll do my job.
Right.
So there was no enforcement mechanism as a result of people not stepping up and taking the responsibility the way they should, they had trouble.
Yeah.
Okay.
People without the threat of some kind of force or some kind of punishment, they get tempted to cheat the system.
That they were selfish.
And not participate and do their duty to the community, to their
families. So what would happen is they would have some sort of a force come in, and that would cause them to bind together under a judge, and then they would cry out to God, and then he would save them. This cycle over and over again. Well, one of those cycles in Judges chapter 5, it's the story of Deborah and Barak, and they have a Canaanite king that's oppressing them. And they stand up and they resist and they win and they get rid of this oppressor. And generally the way oppression worked was they just took your stuff. You know, like in the time of Gideon, which was one of the judges during this period of self-governance, there was a group of people that would come every harvest and just take all their crops. Okay, so it's you could think of it as really, really oppressive taxation.
Right.
Okay. By foreign force, you know, and it's not taxes, and we're investing back in your community. It's we're taking the money somewhere else.
It's confiscation.
And it's confiscation.
And I mean, we see things like this in the modern world, where you know taxes go away, and then they're wasted in D.C. or elsewhere. You know, people don't see them back.
Geography changes, culture changes, the human heart does not change.
Right.
Okay. Human nature doesn't change. So you have this situation, and the people step up, and they're outnumbered. They're out armed, but they step up anyway, and they win a miraculous victory, okay? And Judges chapter 5, there's a song, the song that Deborah and Barak sung after this victory. And the first line of it is, "Blessed be the Lord, the day the leaders led and the people volunteered." And that's kind of the essence of how these three pillars happen. Rule of law, consent of the governed, private property. Those things happen when leaders lead and people volunteer. Well, what does it mean leaders lead? The tyrant's always happy to lead. Well, no, that's not what that's talking about. It's Deborah and Barak, they stuck their neck out for the benefit of others.
Well, and it we say that, but, you know, leaders can lead or they can, you know, take. They can follow whatever they want to do. They can use people for their gain, or they can lead.
So what they were doing is serving they were serving the nation by being willing to step forward. And people volunteered. Nobody was made to come. They right. volunteered. Well, that's what self-governance looked like. It means the leaders step up and take risk for the benefit of others, and then people step up and serve one another. And it's easier than being a slave. But it doesn't look like it up front. Usually the way it works is, it'll be so much easier for you if we take care of this.
Right.
And so we see that in 1 Samuel 8. So after 450 years of self-governance, one of the judges, because they had judges, they didn't have kings, they had judges that led them. But
well, there's a lesson in that, is there needs to be some structure.
There's still leadership.
There needs to be leaders. There needs to be some civil society where, you know, it's not a libertarian, anarchist, lawlessness, you know, thing. We have to organize ourselves as a society.
And there was consent of the governed.
Right.
They had that. But they had a judge, Samuel. The last judge was the first prophet, Samuel. And his sons were corrupt. Okay. And the people had a legitimate beef, and they came and said, "Your sons are corrupt." But instead of saying, "We don't want to follow them, clean up your act," they said, "We want a king." And they had three reasons for wanting a king. They said, we want to be like the other nations. So we don't want to be exceptional anymore. All the other nations have kings, right? And they did not want to be exceptional anymore. And they said, "We want someone to fight our battles for us. We don't want to volunteer anymore." And they said, "We want someone to judge us." Okay, so we don't want to do the hard work of working it out amongst ourselves, right? We want somebody to arbitrate for us. And Samuel goes to God and he says, "Hey, I'm really sorry. I think I failed you here." And God says, No, they're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me as king." And you think about that, when we say in our heart, "I know what's right, I'm gonna do it. I'm going to choose to do that. This person maybe have offended me. I'm going to forgive them. I'm going to serve them anyway." Okay, now we have essentially God as king because we're volunteering to do this. Or if we have a leadership opportunity, we say, "I'm going to serve. I'm not going to. I'm going to serve them. And I'm not going to have them serve me." Right.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so that's God as king. And what God says is, they're rejecting me. And then he says, but go tell them what's going to happen with their king. Okay, here's what's going to happen. They're going to take the kids that should be in their family business, and they're going to take them out of their family and put them in the king's household.
Right.
And their daughters are going to be perfumers and bakers, and the sons are going to be in the military or work the farm, okay? And you're going to say, wait a minute, that's killing my family business, okay? And I'm going to say, I gave you what you asked for. That's exactly. Your judgment, right? And not only that, he's going to take your crops that you make, and he's going to take 10% of them.
Take the best 10%.
Oh, that we only had 10%, right?
Right.
And furthermore, he's going to condemn your property. And he's going to take it, and he's going to give it to his buddies. And
crony
we've never seen that before,
goodness,
right?
Crony capitalism, exactly.
And so he's, and you're going to then cry out to me and say, we're being abused. Our personal property's being abused. Our, you know, this guy's making laws over us. He's break, and I'm going to say, you know, I gave you what you asked for.
Join us back here next week for part two of my interview with Empower Texans Board Chairman Tim Dunn on the biblical roots of self-governance.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers Program? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearer logo on it, or even a beautiful custom-engraved 9mm Glock handgun. Sign up today at texastorchbearers.com.
Put out an APB. We've got a missing congressman. Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us more in this week's commentary.
Maybe it's time to bring out the milk carton advertising of the 1980s. A Texas congressman has gone missing. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. The missing congressman in question is Houston's John Culberson. He's the powerful member of the House Appropriations Committee, and he directly oversees the funding for the Department of Justice and the FBI. Not a day goes by in which we don't learn more about the corrupt culture allowed to fester in the Department of Justice during the Obama administration. That hyper-partisan culture is fed directly into this special investigation of President Trump by Robert Mueller. For months now, members of Congress have been issuing stronger and stronger condemnations of Mueller, the FBI, and DOJ. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz was recently on Fox News offering his strongest concerns yet about the operations of the Justice Department. A wide range of Texas congressmen and other conservatives have been likewise unabashed in demanding more accountability from the DOJ. Yet curiously absent among the members of Congress commenting on the issues has been the one congressman who's uniquely poised to actually demand accountability from the Department of Justice. That would be John Culberson. He's the single member of Congress specifically charged with overseeing the funding of the DOJ and the FBI. He literally controls their purse strings. He could exercise his constitutional Article I power to ask the right questions and demand strong reforms. Mr. Culberson likes to fundraise on his powerful position, but he doesn't use it. In fact, he has three Washington, D.C. fundraisers coming up in the next 3 weeks. All with a minimum entry fee of $500 per person. Given how much he's trying to raise from the swamp, in the swamp, might explain why he's so reluctant to speak out against the swamp. For taxpayers and voters, John Culberson's unwillingness to defend the rule of law and drain the corrupt DOJ swamp has gone from baffling to disgusting. Texans expect and deserve better. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all the time I have for you this week. Join us back here next week for part two of my interview with Tim Dunn on the biblical roots of self-governance. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.